I'll be presenting about the side effects from ciprofloxacin following meningococcal disease prophylaxis in a high school. I have no relationships to disclose. I first wanted to summarize briefly the etiology of meningococcal disease. It's caused by a gram-negative diplococcus called Neisseria meningitidis. It has a human reservoir colonizing the mucosal surfaces of the nasal pharynx, and its transmission is by direct contact of droplet secretions. The symptoms of meningococcal disease include a sudden onset of fever, headache, stiff neck, petechial rash, and in extreme cases can progress to delirium and coma. 10 to 14% of cases are fatal, and of those who recover, 11 to 19% have permanent hearing loss, mental retardation, or the loss of limbs. It is a nationally reportable communicable disease. The diagnosis is based on clinical suspicion and classic bacteriology. Cases are confirmed by a culture-positive isolate taken from a sterile site. Probable cases are those with PCR-positive Gram stain or cerebral spinal fluid antigen test that are compatible with a compatible clinical syndrome. The role of the Department of Public Health is to conduct surveillance, including serogrouping those culture-positive isolates. Serogroups A, C, and Y are vaccine-preventable. We also counsel close contacts on symptoms and offer prophylaxis. In November 2006, two students reported to the Department of Public Health with invasive meningococcal disease in a single day from a local hospital. The cases were from the same high school and had the same day onset. The first case was culture confirmed in blood. The second case was PCR positive in CSF. The cases were from different grades, did not share common classes, activities, or social circles, but both were serogroup B, which is not vaccine preventable. Two point of distribution or pod clinics were assembled by public health district field services and high school officials. Parents, students, and staff were notified via phone message and a letter. The first clinic was held the evening of the notification, and the second one was held the next morning. Names of the cases were released with the goal of encouraging close contacts to go and seek out prophylaxis, but this didn't occur until the first clinic was already underway. Single-dose ciprofloxacin and 500 milligram pills were provided to 2,861 students and teaching staff. Ciprofloxacin was chosen as it is usually well tolerated, and Neisseria is universally susceptible to it, although irreversible joint damage has been documented in juvenile animal studies, though never in human studies. Mass prophylaxis is considered only in limited situations. The CDC, oops, I'm sorry. Oops. There we go. Mass prophylaxis is considered only in limited situations. The CDC recommends it when there are three or more cases of confirmed invasive disease occurring within a three-month time period, and that it occurs in an institutional setting, such as a school or military, because there are risks of giving prophylaxis to a large number of people. It must be considered the large number of people who may develop side effects and the possible development of antimicrobial resistance. So why did we choose setting up a POD clinic in this situation? We could not identify close contacts in a timely manner, and the extent of the carriage was unknown in this population. We took this opportunity to conduct a follow-up survey to answer a few questions. We wanted to record additional unreported side effects of single-dose ciprofloxacin in adolescents, particularly detecting symptoms related to joint problems or allergy and anaphylaxis. We wanted to determine the motivations for attending the POD clinic. How many of these students were actually close contacts? What was their perception of their risk of meningococcal disease? And did the media influence their decision to attend? The survey was limited to one page and developed for all students, whether they attended or not. The content included demographics, when and why they attended the clinic, the side effects of prophylaxis, the type of contact with case students, their health status at the time of the POD clinic, their risk perception of various health conditions, for example, avian influenza termed bird flu in the survey, and traffic accidents. Parents, students, and teaching staff were notified of the follow-up survey 1 week post-clinic. The survey was distributed by teaching staff during a homeroom period during the following week, and data was analyzed using SAS 9.1. Surveys were distributed to 2,888 students present in school that day. 1,649, or 57%, completed the surveys. 25 surveys were excluded due to missing or inappropriate answers, leaving 1,624 surveys available for analysis. A large majority, 1,445, attended the POD clinic, and almost all of them ended up taking the ciprofloxacin, about 96%. The slide shows the demographics of the students completing the survey and those who attended and did not attend the clinic. For the most part, there were very minor or no differences in gender or grade and racial demographics, although a couple of points were significant. Slightly fewer male than female students attended, 87% versus 91%, and fewer Black students attended. Other racial ethnic groups attended at a rate of about 85 to 91%, whereas only 74% of Black students attended. Having contact with cases could include anything as brief as passing by them in the hallway in the survey. 75% had no contact with sick students, and 3% reported sharing a personal item such as a cigarette or food or drink. Students were asked to rate their risk of health conditions on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being not likely and 5 being very likely. Common cold had the highest mean rating of 3.41. Bird flu had the lowest at 1.35. Meningitis came out pretty close to last at 1.49. Reasons for clinic attendance were also rated on a similar scale, 1 being not important, 5 being very important. Parents told me to was highest at 3.97, heard school message was 3.94 a second. Contact with one of the sick students was last at 2.13, heard about it in the media at 2.56. The mean rating of contact with a sick student rose to 3.44 among those with self-reported contact. However, parents told me to and heard school message remained of highest importance, and heard about it in the media still scored among the lowest. The names of the two ill students actually were known by the time of the survey, but may not have been known to them when they were going to the clinic. 1,390, or 96% of those who attended the POD clinic, took the ciprofloxacin. 1,130 students had no symptoms of other illness at the time, and 40% of those, or 455 of those not ill, reported experiencing at least one side effect. Headache was reported most frequently at 17%. Stomach ache was second at 10%, and the symptoms of other symptoms of interest, nausea and vomiting, was at 4%, and rash and itching was at 3%, and we had no reports of joint disorders. The turquoise bar shows the maximum of a range of frequencies of side effects found in previously published pediatric studies, and these studies reported up to 41% in overall side effects, and there's an error there. It should be 41%. But more commonly, 11 to 20%. Individual side effects were reported at much lower rates, and joint disorders were reported in up to 22% of children taking ciprofloxacin. Of interest to note, these pediatric studies have mainly looked at ciprofloxacin for treatment and not prophylaxis. So the variation in results can be explained by the use of different study populations. Pediatric studies often involved ill or hospitalized patients, and in this setting, interactions with other substances may be less common than in non-hospitalized or non-ill patients or populations. There is also a superior ability to detect joint disorders in this setting because of the availability of special equipment or expert personnel. They used a greater dosage and a longer treatment and follow-up time inside evaluation. Follow-up times in these studies ranged from 20 days to 6 weeks. So the high frequencies of headache and stomach ache found in our survey could be attributed to a mistaken attribute of bodily symptoms for side effects in healthy persons. It's been documented that even among healthy people who weren't taking medications, minor symptoms such as headache, fatigue, and drowsiness were routinely experienced. The limitations of our survey include a lack of a placebo group to control for side effects from substance interactions and background prevalence of illness, although we did try to minimize this by considering only those who reported no illness at the time. There's a recall bias. The survey was implemented 2 weeks after the POD clinic. There was the survey was self-administered. There was no presence of public health staff, and so the validity of the reported side effects may be questionable. And there was a low response rate of 57%. In conclusion, we were able to conduct a study amongst the healthy pediatric population. The frequency of side effects was within range of published studies at 40%. Headache and stomach ache was most commonly reported, and we detected additional events of allergy-related symptoms, whereas only two cases of rash were reported prior to the survey. No joint-related problems were reported with single-dose ciprofloxacin. Health departments should work with schools to prepare a risk message regarding unnecessary antibiotic use versus the risk of exposure to disease. Public health has considerable influence on the management of public response because, as we saw in the survey, students understood their low risk and were motivated by parents and the advice of school officials, not by the media. In the end, this was a successful experience in putting to practice bioterrorism and response-related exercises. And that's it. Thank you.
Questions for Ms. No on this, on ciprofloxacin and meningococcal disease. Yes, Perry.
The question was, why we implemented a prophylaxis clinic so soon after just two co-primary cases. And the one thing about Los Angeles County that may be different from most other counties, except for maybe New York, is that we are a highly politicized county, and so there's a lot of things that we're under media and political pressure to do. So that's one issue. And then with the cases, I believe that one of them was in a coma or something, and they weren't allowed to, or they weren't able to fully interview the cases and get a full picture of who their close contacts were. So that was two things. It's partly political pressure, and also that we weren't able to get a complete picture of their social circles.
And the other thing, at the time, it wasn't immediately obvious they were co-primaries. It looked like they might have been a person-to-person spread when the decision was made to do the pod. I'm agreeing with you. I don't think it would have met the CDC algorithm, but the combination of not being able to interview one of the students at the time, thinking that it might have been person to person, it wasn't later that we found out that the second person's onset was a lot closer to the first person's, and therefore they were co-primaries, and an intense political and media pressure to get something done, along with, frankly, I think there was a little bit of an interest of, can we do a pod? We had never done one in this way, except for, you know, sort of fake ones. I think all of those put together ended up in the decision to do this. Other questions? Yes, sir.
How much confidence do you put into your conclusion of no joint problem, since that came from a survey that was done only 2 weeks after exposure to a single dose of ciprofloxacin? In my experience learning about joint problems associated with chloroquinolone tablets, think that you're, even if there was going to be a joint problem, I wouldn't expect it to occur immediately.
That's true. The question was, how much confidence can we say that there were no joint problems, considering that the follow-up time was 2 weeks after the pod clinic? We did heavily consider that. Like, we wanted, when we were making the survey, we wanted to be able to follow up, you know, even longer than 2 weeks. But there was a lot of issue of putting that sort of consent and getting information from students, you know, because we would have to ask their parents, and so it was a consent issue. And, you know, honestly, we can only really say that there were no joint disorder problems a few weeks after a single dose of ciprofloxacin. Although this district, the school district, and because it was such a heavily publicized sort of issue, I do believe that if there were any follow issues a year after, 2 years after, this school district particularly, but this population and demographic, I think we would have gotten some sort of complaints. It would have been somehow reported to public health.
I just wanted to know if, you know, in doing this kind of survey 2 weeks later on a high school population, are there any lessons learned on how you would or wouldn't do a survey on this population in the future? Because it's a tough population to survey.
Yeah, you know, there were, I think the presence of a public health staff or some sort of official staff might have helped in a way, because to help, they're high school students and they're not going to take some of these things seriously. So maybe if it was done in more of an official way, that some of the answers would have, or some of the questions would have been taken more seriously. And if we also had a representative who kind of understood more about what the content of the survey, maybe it could have been explained if there were any questions. Yeah.
Are there any other questions for Ms. Noh? Yes.
Okay. The question was how were the cases notified? Well, the policy of notifying for meningococcal disease for our county is that it should be notified within 24 hours of any sort of suspect or confirmed cases, like lab confirmed cases. And we have a pretty good working relationship with the hospitals. With the infection control hospitals, and they always call us, or like I would say 99% of the time when they suspect anything, the doctors will call us, the hospitals will call us. But technically they can, we have an electronic reporting system that can be reported in. They can fax morbidity reports to us. So by fax, phone, electronic, but for the most part, they will contact us right away because they know that the issue with prophylaxis and what kind of seriousness this is and the time constraints of giving out prophylaxis and identifying contacts.
Technically, in California, doctors, nurses are supposed to report meningococcal disease within 24 hours by phone to the health department, and then can follow up with other things because there is such a short time period for effective post-exposure prophylaxis. We'll take this one last question and then we'll end on this one.
Okay, this is a follow-up actually. How does the school notify the students so quickly? It seems like hours from the time it was set up that evening and everybody came and then their parents told
them. The question was, how did the school notify everybody of the situation? And we were actually lucky with this school, because like I said, the demographics of this school and school district, it's upper middle class. This school was really nicely organized. It has its own web page. It had a some automatic phone machine thing that just instantly phoned out to all parents. So this school was already highly organized, and it probably contributed to everybody getting excited about trying to put a pod clinic together, because it wouldn't have worked in most other schools this quick.
So this school was able to record a message, you know, in a principal's, you know, by the principal or by a school administrator, and then basically push out that message, almost like a robocall. You know, if you live in a swing state, I'm sure you're used to those by now. Basically like a robocall type setup. All right, well, thank you very much for staying to the end, and I want